Welcome to the third of three special podcasts that are being produced to celebrate the 70th anniversary of the CIPR. My name is Russell Goldsmith, and in the previous two shows, I've discussed technology and the future of PR with Stephen Waddington, partner and chief engagement officer at Ketchum, and David Weinberger, one of the co-authors of the Clue Train Manifesto. And then in the second episode, Dr. John White and Professor Anne Gregory join me to talk about PR as a strategic management function and the importance of social purpose. And both those shows are available to download from the CIPR website, but the topic we're focusing on in this episode is the changing face of public sector communications. And so I'm delighted to welcome my two guests who I'm going to be chatting with online today. Firstly, we have Jen Robson, who is Head of Communications for the North East Local Enterprise Partnership, one of 38 LEPs in the country that are responsible for promoting and developing economic growth in their respective local authority areas. And we're also joined by Liz Davis, Head of Communications at the South Tyneside NHS Foundation Trust and City Hospital's Sunderland NHS Foundation Trust. And of course, having Liz on the show is very timely because the NHS is also celebrating its 70th anniversary in 2018 too. And so I'm sure we'll get to hear plenty about that a little later on. So welcome to you both. Let's get straight into the topic of the discussion. With public sector, we're looking at everything from central government and local government, healthcare, law enforcement and security, social care, education. So clearly lots to talk about or lots to cover, and we can't cover it off every aspect of those sectors in one podcast. But before we dig deeper into both your specific areas, what would you say are the shared challenges that all public sector practitioners are facing within comms? Liz, let's come to you first on that.
Well, I think from my perspective, and I'm sure many colleagues will resonate, that doing more with less has become the norm. We've been through a period of sustained austerity across the public sector, which has impacted across the board, not just within communications. And naturally, that puts pressure into the system, which means we need to think more creatively. And I guess linked with that is the rise in expectations, not just of the public. So the more we go out and communicate and engage with the public, the more they expect that. But there's a risk, I think, around a rising expectation of comms teams being able to do more with less. And I think there's an inherent danger there of things like burnout, if we're not careful and making sure that we're resilient in our teams and being able to switch off from all of the various different platforms and social media feeds that we're all involved with. It's how do we manage those competing demands?
And Jen, what's your thoughts?
I totally agree with what Liz said there. I think, again, just to echo, we have to do more with less, and austerity is just a way of the world now. I think with that, we have to be more innovative. The demands on our services are much higher. You know, within the public sector, there's a lot of messages to get out within local authority areas. And I think to do that, we have to be as transparent as ever and measured in the way to maintain our credibility as practitioners.
Sure. Well, it's interesting you both mentioned more with less there. I didn't think we could record this podcast without referring to a story from the Sun newspaper back in January this year, which was actually one that the CIPR felt the need to respond to formally. Now, the headline read, "Just do your job. Police forces and councils splash more and more cash on growing 100 million PR war chest while culling frontline staff." And then the subheading stated that they had found that spending on communications by 250 police forces, councils and NHS trusts increased by 12%. Although, interestingly, within that actual story, it went on to state that the NHS spending on PR was found to have remained almost the same for 5 years. So that subheading was probably quite deceiving anyway. But the article was quite critical of what they classed as publicity stunts on Twitter, which the CIPR responded to the article, you know, as a whole, with a quote from Amanda Coleman, head of communications at Greater Manchester Police, who said, "Public sector communicators deliver vital support to frontline services by providing crucial information, access for help, and ultimately by protecting and saving lives." And then she went on to say, "The past year has shown this is not a nice to have. It is essential to having effective public services." Given the work that both you do, how and as I said, just picking up on what you mentioned there about doing more with less, how does a report like that make you feel, Jen?
Yeah, I think it's really frustrating to read things like that, because like I mentioned before, you know, this whole budget cuts, it's you know, we're dealing with this on a year by year, month by month, day by day basis. And I think the CIPR is totally right to come out with such a strong response so quickly to defend that position. So recent research stated that 63% of public sector practitioners had experienced budget cuts. And at the time, 71% of these respondents also expected reductions in the following year. So a Northeast Council reported a reduction in 11 full-time equivalents, which took their team from 18 to 7 in 3 years. And the reality of those cuts, you know, that happens on a year-by-year basis. So the unrest and the, you know, the process of those staff reductions for a team is really, really impactful. So they're having to go through all of these changes within a team whilst delivering, you know, really strategic and important functions for the local authorities and the public sector as a whole. You know, I think you're right when you say that the figures are potentially a bit inaccurate, because, you know, all the reports and the research tell us that those budget cuts are happening all of the time. And as a sector, we're completely raising the bar in the way that we're delivering communications in our profession. And I'm really proud to be part of that. So, yeah, so I think it's frustrating.
Yeah, I think it is frustrating when we see narrative like this coming out. And it really doesn't surprise me that the Sun headline was deceiving, as you mentioned in your introduction there. I think, firstly, I think it was a very strong, robust, really appropriate response from the CIPR to refute some of those comments. And I think as a profession, we need to get much better at standing up for ourselves and protecting our own reputation if we're really going to position ourselves as the strategic management discipline that we are. We need to be counteracting some of these narratives when they do come out. I think secondly, I did just want to echo some of Amanda Coleman's comments about the impact that we have in public sector communication. So the work that I'm involved with in the NHS over the past 10 years absolutely has a bottom line impact on people's lives, helping people to stop smoking, encouraging people to talk about their mental health, numerous campaigns to increase vaccinations, to reduce spread of infections, all with really strong evaluation about how we've helped to actually save lives. I think that's what we need to get better at doing and bringing to the table and making people appreciate the value of public sector communications.
I want to pick up on something that was in that article, because there was this focus on social media, you know, and particularly, you know, stunts on Twitter. And so I wanted to ask a question about how much value you can get from certain channels. And I only asked this because I was looking at my own local council's Twitter feed this week. So I'm in Hertfordshire, and Welling and Hatfield is my local council. And at the time, it had 7,341 followers. Now, according to the mid-2016 estimate on the council's website, the population of Welling and Hatfield district is 122,000. So their Twitter feed reaches 6% of the population at the very best. But, you know, when you look at all the tweets that they're posting, they're getting little to basically zero engagement on them. So you could argue, would they be better having someone, you know, just walk up and down the shopping centre with a sandwich board making announcements rather than tweeting about them? I don't know what you think on something like that in terms of the reach. But what do local councils need to do to get better value from social media, would you say?
I think that social media is fundamental to any comms strategy, but it should never be exclusive. So you're right to point that out. But we've got a responsibility to really understand our audiences and talk with them in a way that they want to be spoken to on a platform they want to be engaged with. And again, we're really lucky that we've got a lot of choice when we're selecting those platforms and choosing what we'll work with. I think, again, with social media, those insights are so important, taking the time to understand who our followers are and why they're following us is really crucial to getting our content strategies right. So if we take your example of the 6%, if that turned out to be an audience that don't normally engage with the local authority, or that 6% is steadily increasing and you're seeing more engagements, then that in itself is a success story and indicates that your content strategy is working. if it's been stagnant for months, and like you say, you're seeing limited engagements, and you know that number isn't growing, then you've got a problem. And using those insights to change and, you know, amend your activities, really, really important. So I think, again, like with the LEP, we've got over 8,000 social media followers on Twitter, but that isn't anywhere near our full target audience. There's over 100,000 businesses. We want to work with the universities. We want to work with policymakers and shapers, both nationally and regionally. So when you break that down, you know, 60% of our 8,000, 60% is businesses, 20% are partners and influencers, and 20% are education establishments. But the number of comments and engagements we get is growing all of the time. That reach is increasing, and the number of times people ask us questions or, you know, share our content is increasing. So that, for all those numbers are relatively small when you compare them to your entire target audience, the story in that can be really, really positive. So again, I think it just goes back to how important measurement and evaluation and real detailed insight into your strategies and your content is really important. And whilst, you know, again, we've talked about all the demands on our time and how the resource that we have is less, but really I think that just highlights how important that insight and monitoring and evaluation really is, so that we can get the best value out of the channels and you know, where we direct our resource and the best that we can.
Liz, anything to add there?
Absolutely. I think social media is one part of the mix. It's one channel. It's one way that we can engage with our audiences and local publics. And certainly from an NHS perspective, even if we have got 6% of the population engaging with us online, that's better than not having any of that segment of the population engaging with us. I think from a social media perspective, certainly within the NHS, we're still too focused on using it just to push out messages. And this is about dialogue. It's about how we develop that true two-way communication with the people using our services. So I see real opportunities on how we can continue to use this tool across the public sector. Just one more point to add as well, and something that again, we're not brilliant at, but is crucial, is how we soak up all of that intelligence that has been shared about our NHS services online, making sure that we feed that back into the organisation at board level, so that leaders are cited on the issues that local people are talking about. And I think that's part of our role to do that.
Excellent. Well, Liz, sticking with you, because as I mentioned at the top of the show, the NHS is also celebrating its 70th anniversary this year. So obviously the organisation is having to service a very different community to the one it was originally set up to help. What specific challenges are you having to overcome now?
I think there's some major challenges that the NHS is facing as a whole, which is presenting real opportunity for strategic public relations to really step up to the fore and help with some of those challenges. So we're celebrating our 70th birthday this year as well as the CIPR. And the NHS of today is very different to what it was set up in 1948. Some of the biggest challenges we have are around how our population has changed. So we've got an aging population. We've got, because of all the fantastic advances in medicine and technology, we've got people who are living longer with more complex needs and conditions, all of which puts pressure back onto our healthcare system. And then some of the other the big issue items are around how society's changed over those 70 years. So the impact of smoking on the NHS, alcohol and obesity, our lifestyle choices all have profound impact on our healthcare system. So it's a really challenging time for the NHS, and I think we're going through a big sea change in how we need to get people thinking about what their NHS is. So, for example, we need to start changing the perceptions around hospital beds and buildings. Most NHS care takes place outside of hospital, in the community, but there's an overwhelming fixation, particularly among the mass media, around hospitals and hospital beds, and if services have to change in hospitals. And we need to just bring the public with us on a journey to appreciate that the NHS is much more than the fantastic hospitals that we have. It's all of our community teams. It's all of the people visiting people in their own homes to keep them fit and well. I think that's a huge perception challenge that we just need to address in the years ahead. And helping people understand that medicine has changed. So the way we deliver NHS care has changed. We have to centralise more services into fewer hospitals so that we give our patients the absolute best possible chance of survival and recovery. And that means that every local hospital doesn't offer every local service. And that's a difficult message for the public. When the NHS was set up, it was more inclined to be a generalist system, but medicine has moved much more into specialty driven care. And we need to just help people understand that travelling past their local hospital to see the right specialist is going to save their life. And that's a difficult one to get across to the public. I guess two other big ticket items are, again, changing the narrative to one of prevention over the cure. So I talked about alcohol, smoking, obesity. These are all things that through our lifestyle choices, we are putting huge pressure on the NHS. So as a society, we all need to start thinking about and taking responsibility for our own health and well-being and making sure we're trying to live well, which it's a difficult one to enact. It's a culture change that we need. So it's making sure those messages are constant. And I guess the elephant in the room, final point really, is around how we fund our system going forward. As taxpayers, we all foot the bill for the resource that goes into our healthcare system. And there's a lot of waste that goes, I think there's two things. There's a lot of waste that goes on already. So people not turning up to appointments, missing and misusing services, all has a bottom line impact on the money. But I think politically, if we are to, you know, to move forward and really sustain our system for the next 70 years, we need to have some high level, you know, cross-party agreement on what we do for our NHS, so that it doesn't become the constant political football that it does.
I wanted to ask, do you expect babies being born in the NHS maternity wards now will have an NHS in the next 70 years or in 70 years' time, or at least one that you'd actually sort of recognise today?
I think in answer to the first part of your question, categorically, yes, we will still have an NHS in 70 years' time. It is one of our greatest British institutions. I think the recent polling shows over 90% of the British public support the founding principles of the NHS. I think it's part of the fabric of who we are and what we're about as a society. So unequivocally, yes, there will still be babies being born in our NHS. Will the NHS in 70 years' time look and feel the same? No, it won't. And quite rightly not. I think the NHS, like any business or organisation, must continue to adapt and change. That's how we continue to evolve and improve what we do. And it must be different in 70 years' time. It's very different to what it was in 1948. We no longer have the long Nightingale wards and people smoking in hospital wards, which would be unheard of today.
That's incredible when you think that was happening.
That was part and parcel of normal NHS life when it
fantastic.
Began. But absolutely, there will be an NHS. It's got to change. People should remember that we've got the rest of the world looking at us. We are ranked the number one health system in the world, and we just need to keep pushing and keep evolving to meet the needs of our population.
Brilliant. Okay, I want to come on to a different topic. I wanted to look at the CIPR's annual State of the Profession report. So that was released back in March. But within there, there were findings on public sector comms, specifically from the survey of more than 370 people in various public sector roles. Now, one of the questions asked them about their top three challenges facing the sector. We've already talked about social media and you know, the changing digital landscape there. And actually 43% of respondents highlighted that as a key challenge. But the two top challenges highlighted by 47% of respondents to the survey were underrepresentation of PR and comms at board level, and then not being regarded as a professional discipline. So I was just wondering, is this similar to your thinking or that of your colleagues? Jen, let's go with you on this one.
It was the CIPR Local Public Services AGM last night, and we were having this very conversation, and it was a really interesting conversation because I think, you know, that very question, do you have representation, you know, at a board level, is really quite specific. And sometimes we need to take a step back and within our organisation potentially look at where, you know, those strategic decisions are made. And sometimes that's at a senior exec level as opposed to a board level. So I think sometimes that question can be misinterpreted a little bit, and you might respond really specifically. But in fact, we can be really influential in lots of different ways in different organisations. I totally accept that we're really committed to public relations and communications to be seen as a strategic management discipline. But I know in my organisation, as an example, that's absolutely the case. I don't necessarily sit around the board table at every meeting, but I'm an integral part of the senior leadership team and that executive, and have a really close relationship with the chief exec and the chair. And that's a deliberate positioning on my part, because I know that at that exec level, that's where we're really influencing the change and the direction of the organisation. So to be part of that is much more important and much more influential in my specific organisation than formally being part of that board. So I get that in a lot of organisations that the board is the place to be, and I wouldn't underestimate that at all. But I do think as professionals, we need to take a step back and really look at where those decisions are made within the area that we're influencing, and use that positioning wisely in the most appropriate way you're going to add the most value.
And Liz, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think, well, I share those concerns. I took part in the survey myself, and I think I share some of those concerns. If we look at the NHS position, only 44% of senior communications leaders in the NHS report directly to the chief executive. Only one in four sit on the board, and only 2% of those people on the board are full voting members. And for me, this is about the PR profession becoming a constant in the boardroom. And I think that's absolutely got to be in our thinking moving forward. I think Jen's points around influence are very valid, and it's about having the right influence. But for me, there's something around having that constant presence in that senior leadership team, along with the HR director, along with the finance director, along with all of those other professions that have long since been recognised as board level positions. I think we need to be making sure that we're also in that category. I think there is something about to do that, though. We need to start taking ourselves seriously as a profession. You know, there's a lot of people in the NHS that aren't members of a professional body like the CIPR. You know, we need to be constantly doing our CPD and making sure we're at the forefront of everything that we need to be doing. I think until we do that, as everyone working within this industry, we can't expect people to take us, you know, seriously if we don't do it ourselves. I think there's obviously a lot of work going on with the CIPR through Sarah Hall in her presidency about trying to reposition ourselves in that role. And I'm really proud to be part of work going on in the NHS right now at a national level with NHS improvement to look at that very issue within the health sector. So what are the career pathways? What are the competencies that we need to have for board level directors? And how do we invest in those positions and make sure that NHS chief executives value them?
Well, you've almost answered what I was going to say was my final question, actually, Liz, there, because I was going to, you know, accepting that the public sector communications is changing, I was going to ask both of you what you see as best practice moving forward for public sector practitioners. Jen, have you got anything, you know, to add on to what Liz was just saying there?
Yeah, so I totally echo what Liz said. I think we need to keep learning, and we need to do that in every way that is available to us. We learn from people all of the time. The CPD programme of the CPR is fundamental to us as a profession, but just keep absorbing everything that you can. I think our world moves on at such a pace, and we can't afford to get left behind. So that's just so important. And I think, again, in terms of delivery and positioning, just really concentrating on our own content and really make that count. You know, we'll be able to look, you know, through own content, we can look at much broader audiences, we can get loads of insight, we can really influence the media agenda if we do that in a really strong way. So we just need to keep pushing and pushing and pushing to make sure that we're heard. And I think, you know, there's a lot of good examples and best practice about how we're doing that.
And Liz, any final word from you?
Yeah, I think it was three things, really, I just wanted to sum up on in terms of best practice and where we're going. The first was around internal communications and engagement within the public sector. So certainly from an NHS perspective, the comms function has historically been one of a reactive press office. We need to start really thinking about how we engage with our internal audiences and how we create that culture and that positive word of mouth within our local organisations that will then permeate outside of the organisation. For the NHS, there's real value in doing that, because there's a very clear, a clear and proven link between happy, engaged staff and the positive impact that brings on patient care. So I think that's got to be a focus moving forward. I think secondly, in terms of best practice evaluation, we absolutely need to continue demonstrating our worth to the trust boards, to our organisational leaders, through formal evaluation. And we need to make that part and parcel of our business every day. And I think my final thought really was around, in terms of moving forward, collaboration. I think we started this discussion around what are the challenges. And I think collaboration between public sector comms teams has a real, real value in terms of being able to share resource, share expertise, not just within the NHS, but, you know, across the NHS, local authority, police, fire, within local communities. We should be just having those conversations and collaborating much more than we are already, I think.
That's great. That's actually it for this final episode of the CIPR Platinum podcast. So I just want to thank again my two guests for joining me online today for this conversation. So that's Jen Robson and Liz Davis. Don't forget there are three episodes in this series to listen to. The other two are on PR as a strategic management function and the importance of social purpose, and technology and the future of PR. And you can download both of those other episodes from the website at cipr.co.uk. If you've got any comments about this episode, or indeed any of the three shows that we've recorded, then please do get involved in the conversation and share your thoughts on social media using the hashtag #CIPR70. But for now, thanks for listening and goodbye.